Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guest today is Dr. Bali Yehia, Deputy Undersecretary for Health for Community Care at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Also joining us from IBM is Mark Newsom. So, Doctor, what is the Veterans Access Choice and Accountability Act of 2014, also known as the CHOICE Act?
So the CHOICE Act was an act that was passed, as you said, back in 2014. It really was born out of all the different access challenges that the department was facing then. And it provided access really to some resources that VA didn't have. It provided $10 billion that could be used to purchase healthcare in the community for veterans that met certain eligibility criteria, and we can go over those. And then also provided $5 billion to support various workforce and infrastructure initiatives within VA. We have just really passed the third year or so of that program. I think another important point is really this program was temporary in nature, and we can talk about some of the recent law changes that have been occurring, but the program was really set to expire in August of this year or when the money ran out. And there was a law that was passed earlier in the spring that removed that expiration date and said that now really once the funding is depleted is when the program expires. And just recently, Congress passed additional resources to be given to the CHOICE program to the tune of $2.1 billion to continue the program, which will provide us with a little bit more runway to continue caring for veterans.
So you kind of alluded to some of the core elements, and I'd like to know how, if you can even elaborate more, but how do these elements collectively, as a whole under the Act, really change or transform the way care is delivered to veterans?
So there's a number of things that the CHOICE Act did. One is, as I said, it provided VA with access to resources, large resources that we're thankful for to take care of veterans when we can't take care of them inside of our walls. However, it became another patchwork. It became another program on top of our existing community care programs that we are now trying to work with Congress to consolidate and to modernize. So it just became another pathway of doing something similar that we had before. The criteria of CHOICE were very unique. They were based on wait time. So colloquially, if you are waiting more than 30 days from an appointment, you can be seen in the community, or if you lived more than 40 miles from a primary care physician. And they also had some other unique criteria if you lived in the state of Alaska and Hawaii and New Hampshire, as well as if you had what we call unusual and excessive burden in travel, you were crossing lakes and mountains, and they provided with access for those individuals to receive care. Overall, what it did is it created a set of criteria that if you met one of these different criteria, you could receive your care outside of the walls of VA. And it supplemented all the other different programs that we have. And I'll just give you a couple. Like, for example, we have relationships with the Department of Defense where we use their military treatment system to take care of veterans. We have specific relationships with the Indian Health Service and tribal health partners to take care of our veterans. Not to mention our academic affiliates, which is very a strong part of VA and who we are is our relationship to that education and training mission of future doctors and nurses of America. And so we can send our patients to our academic university hospital partners, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. So there's the CHOICE Act became just another pathway and another way to send veterans into the community. We've seen a huge increase in the use of CHOICE over the last couple months, and for that matter, year upon year upon year, more and more people have been using the program as we've been working through all the different kinks through it. And we've seen now about five different legislative changes to the program, which really tells you a few things. Number one, that Congress has been working with us to really make the program better. But then number two, that the program needs to improve. And so we are actually hoping now that to take all the lessons that we learned from CHOICE, all the lessons that we learned from our existing community care programs, look at it and then come up with one program that makes sense. And that's really what we're driving for. That's one of our key priorities now is to consolidate all these different programs. I call it getting the best out of each of them putting them together into one single set of one single program that is effective.
I want to ask Mark to talk about those two programs, but before we get there, I think it makes more sense for you to tell us a little bit more, since you just set up this. What were some of the key challenges to meeting the mandates of the Act?
Sure, I'll just name a couple. The first one is the short time frame, and for folks that follow the Choice Program and VA issues, I think they're very aware that we had 90 days to set up this program. That's unprecedented, and I always compare to our TRICARE colleagues, which took about 3 years plus to set up that program. 3 months versus 3 years is a big time difference, and so But we did that, and the program kicked off. So that was a huge challenge, is really ensuring that we have the right amount of time to create the change that we want to see, which is, again, it's one of those things that I, you know, lesson learned, check. You know, we're working in our next program as we advocate for it to ensure that there's at least a 12-month period that allows us to build the systems that we need to build to deliver such a program on a national scale. The other challenge was really our contracting partners. We had a contract called the PC3 contract, patient-centered care. And that contract was a vehicle for us to be able to purchase healthcare in the community. And it was not designed for the Choice Act. In fact, it preceded the Choice Act. And we had to amend that contract to help us administer this program, because we knew in 90 days we couldn't do it by ourselves. And so, you know, we've been working with our contracting partners over the last couple of years to make that contract more efficient. We've done more than 70 different modifications to the contract, which is a great deal. And again, it shows you the same, it's the same principle that I just talked about with how many law changes we had, how many contract changes we have. We've been making the program work better, and more veterans and more referrals have been going through it, but there's still kinks in the system. And really the issues why those kinks exist is because the starting product was not the one that we needed. And so now we have an opportunity before us with the Choice Act, and really with this new infusion of cash being able to be extended for a number of months into the future. But the time is now to develop the system and the contract and the program of the future. And so in my mind, there's been a number of challenges. We've been able to tackle many of them. Some of them are still challenges. And what we really need is a reset. We need to take all these different programs, take the best of those programs, and then work with our legislative partners to craft a law that makes the most sense. We're already well along the way to issue a new contract to be able to help us manage that workload and to help us build networks across the country that really evolves from our existing contract. And then really all these different technologies that we've been talking about and processes and system changes, we need all those to also marry up. So together with a new law, new network partners, and new technologies, I think we can really meet the vision that we've been driving toward, which is that one program that's easy to understand, that's simple to administer, and that meets the needs of our stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. So you've talked Choice Act and you talked PC3 in very good detail. What is Project ARCH, Access Received Closer to Home, and what are its benefits?
So Project ARCH was a pilot program to look at how we can provide healthcare closer to home, especially for veterans that are living in rural areas. And for the most part, you know, I've had town halls in many of the ARCH states. One of them is in Maine, Montana, and in Kansas, among others. And for the most part, folks love their ARCH experience. When you dig into why they really like them, again, it's one of those lessons learned that we identified. It was because of those relationships that they had. Those veterans had a point of contact at the VA. They had a point of contact at their community provider. And taken together, they could coordinate care really, really well. And so really the lessons that were learned about ARCH was how effective they were in coordinating care at that local level. The partners may have been the same partners that we had in our Choice program or in our PC3 contract or really in any others. So that wasn't really the secret sauce. It was really about how care is coordinated at that local level. And I think that's something that we understood that, and now we're carrying that forward, not only in our proposed plan for the future, but also into our new request for proposals for a new contract, is really that value that occurs when care is delivered locally, and those relationships that are so important to people. People want to have a first name relationship with their coordinator, especially if they're receiving a lot of care outside, and not some ambiguous person over the phone that may be miles away. And so as best as we can, we are going to try to replicate those experiences for our patients moving forward.
So, you know, Doctor, you mentioned a couple of times what's happening up on the Hill. There's a lot of legislative proposals. Recently, we're up there kind of giving the VA's perspective on a number. I think there were like 11 that you had to respond to. And where I'm going with this is, could you give us a sense of, you know, detail some of the best elements of these proposals and maybe highlight some of the most significant drawbacks of them?
Mm. So I think the good thing that's occurring right now is everyone understands that there is a need, a mandate for change. And so both on with our House colleagues and our Senate colleagues and really all of our Veterans Service Organization colleagues, everyone realizes that the time is now for change. And so making sure that we can not just continue the Choice Act as is in perpetuity, but really transform it and combine it and modernize it with all of our different community care programs. So I think that is a really important point, because it is clear that something needs to be done. And so I think sometimes that might even be the hardest thing, is to, you know, why do we need to do this? Sure. You know, we don't really need to answer that question. I think everyone really knows that the time is now, and the why is that this program has so many different merits, but has also so many different kinks. And so there is a need for change. So I think that's important. The second thing that is important among the different proposals that are out there are the fact that they are tackling the key elements that we need them to tackle. And so when we think about our veterans' journey through community care, we know that we need to come up with a simple to administer and a single set of eligibility criteria. Every single one of the different proposals is trying to do that. We know that our referral processes need to be simpler. We know we need to have flexibility in how we build and design networks and how we partner with community providers to not only ensure that we pay them on time, but that we also are able to exchange information easily. So all of those different key elements are being addressed. Some are being tackled in different ways. And so ultimately, what we need to do is to build that consensus and to share with our stakeholders what has our experience been. And for me, I'm a very data-driven individual. I like to look at what's occurring, what's working, what's not, and really put it out there. We want to take the best elements of all these different programs and to move them forward. I think today, when I think of all the 7, 8 different ways of doing business, not one of them is the best way. Mm-hmm. Each of them has different features. We just talked about ARCH. Their, I think, claim to fame is that care coordination pathway, which is really excellent. When I think about Choice and PC3, one of the major advantages is that by having contract partners, we have access to data about utilization and are more easily able to track some of these key statistics to make decisions about population health. That's an important feature. Our traditional community care programs, a lot of the work is being done locally at that local facility or in that local community. So they know, they have those key relationships, and they know if this doctor offers this service or not. And that's important. And so we really want to take all these different key elements and put them together and to move the ball forward.
What does the future hold for VA's community care efforts? We will ask Dr. Bali Yehia, Deputy Undersecretary for Health for Community Care at VA, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.